thank you for joining us today. I will spare you the pain and media indignity of actually singing happy birthday, but I could not let the sixth anniversary of the energy bill, RFS2, pass without making some reference to the great success that this bill has been. Now, 6 years ago, I joined several colleagues and scores of renewable energy enthusiasts in the auditorium of the Forrestal Building as President Bush signed the Energy Independence and Security Act into law. It was a great day. At the time, we were celebrating the most progressive, the most thoughtful energy legislation ever enacted. The U.S. had staked a claim on that day that we will lead the world toward clean energy. We will lead the world toward increased renewable fuels. We were going to make a statement about the need for innovation in our energy use, growing the renewable fuels market, expanding markets for farmers. It was the very first program that actually had a greenhouse gas standard associated with liquid transportation fuels, thus becoming the only program in the world that was actually doing something to reduce or address climate change. It was a wonderful day. And I will tell you that 6 years later, it is still a great day because this program is doing everything that it was supposed to do and more. The president 6 years ago talked about how it was going to make a major step toward reducing our dependence on oil, confronting global climate change, expanding the production of renewable fuels, and giving future generations a nation that is stronger, cleaner, and more secure. That's exactly what it has done. By any metric, whether it's looking at the impact on the industry, the impact on agriculture, the impact on the environment, the impact on fuel prices, the impact on energy security, or the impact on food prices. This legislation has done what it was intended to do, and done so without causing havoc in the energy markets. The amount of flexibility in this program has helped make it a success. And so, while there are detractors to this program today, I am celebrating the passage of the RFS. I am celebrating the fact that it is still in place. I'm celebrating the fact that it has been a tremendous policy and marketplace success. And I'm going to celebrate that it's going to be around for 9 more years. But enough with the rhetorical flair. The RFA tries to make sure that everything that we do in defense of these programs is founded on good, solid, technical data. And with me today is someone that's familiar to many of you, Jeff Cooper, who is our Vice President for Research. And Jeff has done a thorough review of the program. And I will let him take over now.
Well, thanks a lot, Bob, and I certainly appreciate everyone taking some time to call in this afternoon. As Bob said, you know, we thought it would be fun to look at, you know, how exactly has this program affected the industry? How has it affected the agriculture sector? What do fuel prices look like? And really do kind of a side-by-side comparison of how the world looked on this day 6 years ago compared to how it looks today in terms of some of these impacts and kind of take stock in the progress we're making toward the legislative objectives of the bill that was signed into law 6 years ago today. So what we did is essentially, you know, again, take a snapshot of several key variables, key factors from this day or this month in 2007 and compare them to today. And that's what you see in the two-page report that we issued just a little bit ago this morning. And I guess first and foremost, you know, when you look at the program's impact on the ethanol industry, as Bob said, it has done exactly what it was intended to do. As we enter 2007, there were about 110 operational corn ethanol plants across the country. Those plants produced about 6.5 billion gallons of ethanol that year. 6 years later, we have about 209 operational corn ethanol plants installed across the country. So we've virtually doubled the number of corn ethanol facilities since 2007. And as you would expect, we expect production, you know, the volume of ethanol produced this year to be about double what it was in 2007 as well. We're projecting 13.3 billion gallons of corn ethanol production this year. You know, along with that, we've seen a doubling in the output of co-products such as distillers' grains, corn gluten feed, corn gluten meal. You know, today we're producing about 37 million metric tons of those animal feed co-products. The industry is also producing a substantial amount of distillers' corn oil that's being used both in animal feed markets as well as a feedstock for biodiesel. So when you look at the value of those products that this industry is producing, we're estimating that the value of ethanol and co-products this year is going to be somewhere on the order of $42 billion. That's about 2.5 times the value of the industry's output in 2007. Jobs have increased. We've added about 150,000 jobs in the ethanol industry since 2007. And, you know, the other key objective of the renewable fuel standard was to drive growth in advanced biofuels production, and we have certainly seen that. In 2007, there were about 450 million gallons of biodiesel produced domestically. This year, based on EPA numbers, we're projecting about 1.5 billion gallons of biodiesel and other domestically produced advanced biofuels, so about a 240% increase. Looking at some of the changes in the agriculture sector, you know, going back to 2007, that was the first year in history that we produced a 13 billion bushel corn crop. You know, just like this year, 2007 was an outstanding year for corn production. And that year's crop came in at just a hair over 13 billion bushels. This year, we're looking at the first 14 billion bushel crop in history. USDA's latest estimates have this year's crop at 13.99 billion bushels, so up about 7% over that 2007 crop. At the same time, we've seen an increase in the output per acre for corn. Average corn yields are up about 10 bushels per acre, about a 6% increase over 2007. And I think very interesting is that the price of corn today is about what it was 6 years ago. The day President Bush signed this bill into law, corn prices were $4.34 a bushel. About 10 minutes before this call, the price of corn was trading at $4.28 per bushel. So we're actually seeing corn prices 6 cents a bushel lower today than they were 6 years ago. You know, we've heard lots about the impacts or the proposed supposed impacts of the RFS on land use. EPA is required annually to look at agricultural land use, and what they have found is that in keeping with the long-term trends, agricultural land use in this country continues to decline. When they looked at 2012 land use, they found 384 million acres were engaged in agricultural production. That was about 5% lower than the acreage on the date that ISA or this bill was passed. You know, the gross value of crops and livestock has increased dramatically since 2007. Obviously, that's not all because of the RFS or because of ethanol, but certainly the growth in demand for agricultural commodities that has come from ethanol has played a role in increasing that value. And net farm income has virtually doubled since 2007. About $70 billion of net farm income in 2007. And this year, USDA is projecting about $131 billion, which would be an all-time record. You know, we all saw the Associated Press story very recently, and there's been, I guess, a renewed focus because of that story on the environmental issues associated with the renewable fuel standard. We hear all kinds of allegations about deforestation in the Amazon and you know, the so-called dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Well, again, if you look at the numbers, if you look at the data, you know, according to Louisiana State University and the folks at NOAA, the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico is smaller today, about 27% smaller, than it was the year the energy bill was signed into law. And in fact, last year, 2012, the hypoxic zone was the smallest it had been in 12 years. So again, I think these numbers really speak to the fact that there's really no correlation whatsoever between corn acres or ethanol production or whatever you want to look at and the size of the hypoxic zone in the Gulf. You know, very similarly, deforestation in the Amazon is at its lowest rate since the government there in Brazil began tracking this in 1988. The deforestation rate this year is estimated at about 1,800 square miles, and that's about 60% less than what was deforested in 2007. You know, the Energy Information Administration has shown that CO2 emissions from transportation are down. That's partly because we're driving less, obviously, but again, you can do the math and calculate that using ethanol in lieu of gasoline is responsible for at least 35 million metric tons of the reduction in CO2 emissions from transportation. Along with that, we included the GREET model analysis of the carbon footprint of corn ethanol from both 2007 and 2013. Back in 2007, the average gallon of corn ethanol was reducing GHG emissions by about 25% compared to gasoline. The very latest analysis using the GREET model shows the average gallon is reducing GHG emissions by about 34% compared to gasoline, and that would include some of these hypothetical land use change emissions. So, you know, some things have changed a lot and other things haven't changed all that much. When you look at oil prices, they were, you know, considered high in 2007, and I think we would all agree that oil prices remain at levels that consumers would consider high today. Oil prices, Brent crude prices, are up 50% from 2007. The price of diesel is up about 36%. Retail gas prices, while they've seemed moderate in recent months, have actually increased by about 25% compared to the 2007 average. Meanwhile, ethanol prices are up about 10% at the rack over that time. So, you know, obviously we've seen growth in domestic oil production, and that has increased the supply here, but it hasn't necessarily translated to lower prices. And in fact, the addition of ethanol is really probably responsible for helping to keep a lid on prices for gasoline, and these prices would certainly be higher today than they are if not for the addition of ethanol to the gasoline supply. Now, as Bob mentioned, one of the major goals of the Energy Independence and Security Act was to reduce dependence on foreign oil. And we have absolutely made significant progress in doing that over the last 6 years. You know, of course, some of that progress is attributable to increased fuel economy and the fact that we're using less gasoline and diesel fuel. Some of it is attributable to the increase in domestic oil production that's coming from fracking, but it is undeniable that the growth in biofuels production has played a major role in reducing import reliance as well. If you look at crude oil imports and the amount that we import as a percentage of the amount that we use, In 2007, about two-thirds of the crude oil that refiners in this country processed was imported. Today, that number in 2013 is going to be about 51%. So we're still importing more than half of the crude oil that we use in this country, even though we've made a pretty big improvement from 2007. Now, the number that the oil industry likes to flaunt is the total import dependence on all crude oil and refined petroleum products, and that number is down from about 58% in 2007 to an estimated 35% in 2013. And I think if you look within that, what's interesting to notice is that gasoline imports, we typically imported 6.5 or 7 billion gallons a year of gasoline back in 2006, 2007. Today, we import virtually no gasoline. There's very little gasoline imports coming in to the country today, and that is a direct result of the increase in ethanol production. Today, ethanol makes up about, very close to 10% of the gasoline supply, and as you'd expect, that's virtually double where we were in 2007. 2007 was about 4.6% of the gasoline pool. Now, the other thing I wanted to quickly look at was the impact on food markets, because that's another criticism or myth that we hear is that the RFS has somehow contributed to, runaway food prices or increased spending on food by the average American household, and the data just don't support that. When you look at world food prices as measured by the United Nations, there's been about an 8% increase from December of 2007, which would certainly be lower than general inflation for all items during that time. In the U.S. specifically, the consumer price index for all items, so general inflation, has increased 11% since December of 2007. At the same time, food prices have increased 13.8% here in the United States. So, food price inflation, as it's always been, has been very much in line with overall, kind of core inflation. When you look at what the average household is spending on food, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the average household today is spending about 13% more on groceries than it did in 2007. Again, not abnormal or out of line with general inflation. What's really interesting to me is that the average household is really not spending hardly any more money on food away from home, so dining out. In fact, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says the average household spent about $10 more in 2012 than it did in 2007, so a very small increase there. Food inflation is down. USDA is expecting food prices in 2013 to increase just 2% over last year. That contrasts with the annual food inflation in 2007 of about 4%. I also think it's interesting to look at specific individual food items. You can walk into the grocery store today and spend less on a gallon of milk than you would have on this day 6 years ago. The same is true for a dozen eggs. And when you look at meat items like chicken breast or pork chops, you're spending about 8 or 9% more than you would have in December of 2007. Again, that's an increase that is not abnormal or out of line with historical trends. So that's just a quick rundown of some of the prices and changes and different markets that we looked at. And again, the point was just to show that the RFS has indeed lived up to its promise in building out a renewable fuels industry, in reducing dependence on imported petroleum, in stimulating the agricultural economy, and at the same time, the RFS has simply not had the types of impacts on the environment and on food markets that detractors of the program have claimed.